Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
So it does feel like the Packers season's over and they're still making news. There was Aaron after the game. Then we see Aaron yesterday in the back of a pickup truck, funny video. And now a former teammate, TJ Lang, came out yesterday in a radio station and talked about Aaron Rodgers is hell-bent on revenge for Green Bay. Here it is.
I think he's going to be hell-bent on some revenge, man. Mm-hmm. I think he was quietly pissed when they took Jordan Love a year ago. I think he's going to make them pay, man. I think he's going to want some sort of new deal where they guarantee a couple more years for him, security-wise, being in Green Bay. I don't think he wants to go anywhere, but I think he's going to hold their feet to the fire and say, hey, you're going to keep me around. A, you're going to pay me, and B, you're going to bring in some players that I want to play with where we can take this next leap.
I'm not bothered by any of that. In review, A, Aaron Rodgers a little upset they had needs and drafted a quarterback. I get that. B, he wants them to finally go all in. Yeah, that'd be nice. And a C, he wants to get paid his actual value and potentially get more security. I'm okay with that. That doesn't sound like revenge. It sounds like impatience. It sounds like leverage. Here's the problem, is that Seattle and Tampa and the Saints and the 49ers and this weekend the Rams, all the teams he's battling to get through in the NFC have all been, over the last 4 to 5 to 6 years, hyper-aggressive. Big swings, Jamal Adams, Carlos Dunlap, Emmanuel Sanders, big swings. Matt Stafford, now a Ram. And the Packers went out and once spent a little money on Za'Darius Smith, a nice player. Like, I get it. The reason Aaron and Green Bay are always in the news, because this is why it's the most unique relationship in the NFL, and this is not all Aaron's fault. In fact, I back Aaron on this. The Packers and Aaron are driven by two different things. And it's not like that with Mahomes in Kansas City. It's not like that with Brady, Bucks, or Patriots. It's not like that with any other quarterback in the league. But Green Bay and Aaron are driven by two different things. Green Bay is driven by fear, which is such a drag when you're a rock star. They're driven by fear. They don't want to be irrelevant. They don't have an owner. It's owned by the community. And when Vince Lombardi left, they went 25 years and they had two playoff appearances. I grew up and the Packers were irrelevant before Favre. Nobody talked about the Packers post-Lombardi to Favre. It was Cowboys. It was the Washington football team. If you looked around the NFC, it was Philadelphia. It was Chicago for a while in the 90s. They were irrelevant. And they're fear-based. And everything is to... That's why they... Go look at last year's draft. It was all about fear. Let's get Jordan Love. You knew he wasn't going to play for 3 years, but it was, we just don't want to not have a quarterback. We remember when we didn't. Nobody talks about us for 25 years. And then in the second round, they get a running back. Did they need a running back? No, they had two great running backs. It was to protect them when Aaron Jones now is a free agent. It was all about protecting, playing it safe, putting away your retirement, paying off your house. Aaron's not driven by that. Aaron's the California kid. He's aspirational. He is hedge fund. He is big swing. He is going for it. He's the rock star with these super conservative parents, and it wears him out. And I side with Aaron on this. Green Bay is the smallest city that when they... There's three or four times they've been irrelevant. Bart Starr, Favre, Rodgers. When they didn't have quarterbacks, nobody cared about them. And that matters when you don't have an owner. And you are the smallest market. And you own the team. It's all fear-based nonsense, which wears me out. They're constantly building for that retirement. They put money in their pension. And Aaron's a rock star. He's throwing money all over. He's an angel investor taking big swings. And so 30 years, Green Bay has two Super Bowls. That's with Favre and Rodgers. So you can win them, but they should have three times that. And what's really troubling for Aaron is this wasn't really as noticeable when he entered the league. But because of so many young, aggressive general managers, John Schneider in Seattle is aggressive, and John Lynch in San Francisco, and Les Snead in Los Angeles, you get these young Howie Roseman, Philadelphia, these young, super aggressive general managers making deals, and Green Bay's always sitting on their hands. So it gets jammed into Aaron's face. I'd be upset too. You're being compared to Russell Wilson and compared to Tom Brady and compared to great quarterbacks. But those guys have owners and teams with the same agenda, with the same aspirations. Green Bay is all about fear. It's all about putting it away, protecting yourself, never getting caught without a quarterback. It's wearing him out. I don't think any of that. Listen, since Aaron last got to a Super Bowl, half the NFC has gotten there. And he hasn't again. And in that time, he's inarguably, I mean, maybe Russell Wilson, but he's been the best NFC quarterback on average over that time. So when I hear TJ Lang talking about that stuff, that doesn't sound unrealistic. He's worn out. He's driven by big swings, going for it. He's kind of an aspirational California kid, and he's in the smallest city that's petrified to be irrelevant, and I think he's over it. I would be too. Now, obviously, Sunday, Tom Brady, Mahomes. Brady is a little bit, I guess you could say it's less authentic, but we don't know that. Maybe Tom's just a nice guy. Tom always takes the high road. Tom's very gracious. His teammates love him. Around the league, he's revered. Tom always, you know, he'll yell at a teammate on the sidelines, but that's in-game stuff. Nobody cares about that. But after the game, there's no meltdowns. Yesterday, he's asked about Belichick, and it's classic Tom. He's very sweet.
I have a great relationship with him. And, again, I'm just incredibly grateful for, you know, what he's meant in my life as a coach. And he was everything you could ask for as a player. And, you know, I love my time. I had two incredible decades there. And, you know, my football journey took me to a different place. And I certainly could never have accomplished the things in my career without his support and his teachings.
It's almost corny. But yet he's one of the least liked NFL players. We still love Favre, love MJ, love Peyton Manning. They had flaws. You want to know why a lot of people hate Tom? He's never needed us. Supermodel wife. He doesn't even need Belichick. He's rich. Wife's rich. Kids will be. He never needs us to embrace him. Tiger Woods' life, full of controversy, full of unredeemable things. But he won the Masters in 2019. People call it their favorite sports moment of the year. Some of the decade, it was mine. Because Tiger felt like it was a little bit of a comeback. Tiger needed us. LeBron, he was a villain, goes to Cleveland, writes the letter, vulnerable. It's easy to root for. But Tom's different. Tom's continuously ascending. He never needs our comfort. He never truly stumbles. In my lifetime, he's the only great American athlete that has never asked for our help or needed our help. Even Michael Jordan, we saw him for years, the wrong coach, get tackled viciously by the Detroit Pistons. We saw him try in baseball and fail. The awful murder of his dad. We lived through his pain. There were times, the comfort. You saw the anguish, hugging the trophy, laying on the floor when he won. Everybody wants to be needed. Everybody's had to overcome something. The big beef with Tom is he was once drafted in the sixth round. I mean, even our superheroes, Spider-Man, his uncle dies. Batman, their parents die. Superman. Basically, he got shoved to another planet. His planet blew up. Kryptonite. I mean, everybody. Superheroes. The parents dying. Orphaned in another planet. There's this device or a rock or kryptonite. Tom Brady, his only true rival now is time, and he's beating that. And he doesn't need our help. And he created his own avocado ice cream. We want to hug you. We want you to need us. And Tom never does.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's one of my favorite coaches. Andy Reid, Kansas City Chiefs, is now joining us live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So first of all, I find this fascinating. You are 26-5 off a bye. That doesn't even make sense. It's like you're coaching at Alabama. So my theory is, you're one of these guys that sits up at night and you're drawing plays all the time and you got little tricks. And if you give you another week, you drop more tricks. So a lot of it's that you love to drop tricks and plays and everybody in the league hates to face you off a bye. That has to be some of it, right? Your tricks and your schemes in that extra week.
Well, Colin, we try to have some fun with it. I'm blessed to have some good coaches that help me with it. And I still enjoy doing it. So we get in there, we grind a little bit and come up with some pretty good things. And we hope they work. We've been fortunate where a few of them have.
Yeah. So at the end of the year, Andy, I kept saying over and over, I said, what's going on with the Chiefs in December? They're just not quite firing. And I theorized, I said, when you're able to score so quickly, I wonder if it's hard to create urgency with guys. You have great players, you score quickly, and it was almost as if bored is the wrong word, but it didn't feel like your guys just knew they were better. But your December was kind of interesting. Go back. Were you unhappy with how you guys played in December?
Well, we started fast in most of those games, and then we had to kind of put it together in the second half. And some of that is what I was calling on the offensive side and maybe not staying as aggressive. Our guys do a pretty good job with staying in tune with the game. The thing I was probably most proud of was just how we finished the games. Just
right.
It would come down to the fourth quarter, and we were able to put the things away, but it wasn't as much boredom as it probably was just giving the guys a little bit more juice to play with.
In my life, John Elway was the first quarterback. We both kind of grew up with him in our generation, where John was almost better from behind than he was with a lead. Brady became the next guy where Tom's better in the second half of Super Bowls trailing than he is in the first quarter. Patrick Mahomes feels like the third, where he is 15-4 or 15-5 after an interception. He falls behind. He plays with a joy. It's very rare. Most great quarterbacks aren't that. Did you notice it early? Is it from parenting? Is it just innate? Like he never changes his body language, Andy. He never changes his aesthetic or his style. When did you first notice that?
Yeah, right when we got him. He's got a certain enthusiasm about him, a childish enthusiasm. People always ask me to compare him to Brett Favre, and I'm going, maybe that's it. Maybe that part's it. They're different guys, obviously. All the guys are different. So, but he has that where you could be playing in the backyard. You could be playing, at the CVS parking lot. You could be playing in one of these beautiful stadiums that we have, and it's all the same. You're getting the same pitcher, and he comes to work every day with that. And he busts his tail to make sure things are right, and he brings everybody together that way. So he's a great uniter of your football team, and the guys on the offensive side get to do it with him every day.
Obviously, you are considered the great play designer of my life. You and Bill Walsh, you create, you play design. Are there times you design these plays that you've ever just said to Mahomes, hey, kind of go with what you feel after the design? Like, is there a little ad lib built into this because he is so gifted?
I'll tell you what, Colin, he's a great ad libber. And I don't have to say a word to him. So I just want him to play the game. So we always talk about letting their personality show. Let your personality show. Well, that's his personality. He's going to take and make the play the best it possibly can be. Just innately. And so I don't want to disrupt that. I don't want to get in the way of that. Just you let them go and let his greatness show.
So you face Brady a lot. You've had some success against him, but you know he is. Listen, you get late into games, and I'll watch you on the sidelines against Brady. It's no fun if he has the ball. It's just no fun. So when you know that you're not going to fool him, I mean, he's seen everything. Is there kind of a way to face all these years of facing him? Is there a trick? Is there something? I mean, what do you tell your defensive guys? What do you tell your coordinators? Is there any little nugget that works against him?
Well, you've got to play. You got to play four quarters against him. And then it's likewise on the other side. There's just never enough points that you're going to be able to score against that guy. I mean, you've got to keep going. And if you don't, he's already proven that he can do that. That's what's made him a great player over all these years. So with our defense, Spags and his guys have done that. They've played four quarters of good football against them, and we've had a little success. But it's amazing that this guy's 43 years old, Colin. You know, he's 43 years old, and I had a chance to play against him, or my team in Philadelphia did, 16 years ago, and it doesn't look any different to me. This is what he is. I mean, there's some to this avocado ice cream, man. I got to get some.
Yeah, we all like ice cream. Just put some avocados in it, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's right.
So last year, you've been to now, this will be your third Super Bowl. I asked Jimmy Johnson this yesterday. You're very good off buys. It's a game the world's watching. Do you ever have to say to yourself, hey, Andy, don't overcoach here. I got great players. You know, sometimes that extra week, there's going to be pressure in this game that some of your players, you know, some are – it's hard. It's a different game, Andy. Do you coach a Super Bowl slightly differently? Do you think about the pressure? Does any of that come into mind?
Well, you know, it's an exciting atmosphere, and it's going to bring out the best in some guys, and other guys, they're going to have to warm up to it. So I get that. We try to get in our plays during the week before this week. So last week we got in the majority of the game plan. And that way we can go back and we can review it and go through it again, one more rep on it and so on as we work through. There's a lot of media obligations this week, even not being in Tampa. So I'm glad we got the game plan in. The other thing I tell the coaches is don't tinker with it. Just let it go. You got it in, you put your best stuff in and let's roll with it. And you start adding just what you're saying. You start adding things into these things can grow to a monster, and then you can't go function.
Yeah. God, look at that last year. Isn't that amazing? What'd you do after you won last year? What'd you do that night? What'd you do the rest of the night?
Yeah, well, they have a huge party, man. Pitbull was there. Colin, this joker is however old. He's not that young. However old he is, I feel like he's been going for a long time here. And he went till 4:30 in the morning. And I said, if he can do it, I can do it, man. I'm hanging right with him. Except the only difference was he was dancing. I was sitting.
By the way, do you worry at all? Chris you know, Jones is talking about a little dynasty stuff. Do you ever say to your guys, stop. Let's be a dynasty before we talk about a dynasty.
Yeah. You know, Chris Jones is a big personality, man. And you love that about him. But you're going to get a couple of those fluffy things come out of there, man, that you just kind of you shake your head. But if you know the kid, you kind of laugh it off and go with it. He comes out every day, man. He's got a smile on his face, and he just goes. He's the epitome of a defensive lineman. If a Martian came down and said, show me a defensive lineman, besides Jason Taylor, I'd show him this guy. Those two are completely opposite, Joey. I'm just telling you, completely opposite. But I'd show him Chris. I'll tell you, he's a beauty.
Yeah. Andy, so are you. We love having you on the show. Can't wait. We'll be watching. So will America, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Joey, hello. You look great back there. And having to deal with Colin, man, you got a special place in heaven, babe.
Thank you, Coach. Good luck Sunday.
All right. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So what I do before these big games, I take a yellow pad, and I write down who I think in order are the 10 best players. And I usually get a 7-3 or an 8-2 split, and I feel they're going to win this game. And I was surprised. I've said this, that Kansas City was only a 3-point favorite. When the game started, I tried to guess the line, and my guess was it would be closer to 5, be more of a 5-point spread. 4.5, 5, 5.5. It's 3 to 3.5. And so this morning I thought, all right, let's just write down the 10 best players, what I believe in order in this Super Bowl, and here we go.
Number one.
All right, Patrick Mahomes. Let's not argue about it. Last 26 games, he's won 25, 60 touchdowns, 12 picks in that space. He is the has the best winning percentage, 83%, of any quarterback in the Super Bowl era. So he would be the best player in this game. Okay, best player is Patrick Mahomes. The second best player would be Tom Brady. Let's just stop the nonsense. You didn't think he was going to be here. Okay? And since week 14, he's absolutely on fire. 7-0 and a passer rating of 111. So as Tom has learned the system, most of us predicted, you did, I did, they would be better offensively late than early. That was clearly the case, except for that Saints loss at home. So Brady's the second best player. He's also... the two quarterbacks also take the most snaps, have the ball, and will direct the most traffic. So they're very influential.
Number three
would be Travis Kelce. I think he's the best tight end potentially in 5 or 6 more years we've ever seen. Most receiving yards in a season by a tight end in NFL history, including the playoffs. In the playoffs this year, when he's been targeted, Patrick Mahomes' passer rating is 144. I think he's the toughest matchup in the NFL. There's guys that are faster. There's guys that are bigger. But I don't think there's a linebacker that can cover him. And I don't think there's a safety that can bring him down or a corner. So I'd say Travis Kelce is the unstoppable weapon as number three.
Number four.
I'd go Tyreek Hill, fastest player in the league. You have to bracket him. Last time Tampa faced him, it was absurd. He had 270 yards and 3 touchdowns. It was the best day by any player playing wide receiver in the NFL. He has that look sometimes. If you ever go to a high school game and there's like one kid that's going to be a college player and it doesn't look fair, he's just faster than everybody. Tyreek Hill in the NFL is just faster than everybody. And if he gets rolling on the outside, he makes corners look slow. I'd say Tyreek Hill 4.
Number 5.
Mike Evans. Brady fell in love with him fast, and Mike Evans is fantastic. Only player in NFL history, Mike Evans, wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, to have 1,000-plus receiving yards in each of his first 7 seasons. He came out of Texas A&M. He's big, he can run, he's strong. And the frustrating part to defending Mike Evans, you can have him covered, but he's an NBA player. You're 6'7", he's long, he can jump. So, I mean, even watching practice footage, he looks like an NBA guy out there. He's just a problem. You can defend him well. Those are the guys that are legends. You got him defended well. You got Walter Payton, the late, great Walter Payton, got him cornered, and he picks up yards. You can defend Mike Evans well, and he still makes plays.
Number 6.
The most instinctive player in this game, Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. I put him in here, and I may have him higher than others. Pro Bowler last 2 years. The only player that I can think of in my lifetime that is as instinctive, literally is always around the ball, is Ed Reed for the Ravens. Those players in my lifetime have an ability to sniff the play. If you watch footage of Kansas City's defense, he is just staring at the eyes of the quarterback. He'll move from the left side of the field to the right side of the field. One of 4 players with 20-plus picks in the last 5 years. I think he is so incredibly valuable, and most of the stuff he does, he's not the fastest. He came out of LSU. He wasn't a number one corner. He's not really a safety. He's not big enough to be a linebacker. He is just great football player. That's what he is. He is a great football player.
Number 7.
Chris Jones, a total disruptor for the Chiefs on the defensive front. Second most sacks by any defensive tackle in the last 3 years except Aaron Donald. Again, he's just very hard to singularly block. He's aggressive. He's a personality. He's a trash talker. And you saw it in Buffalo. They just struggled to block him. And so he is a defensive tackle. There's only 2 or 3 in the league. There's Fletcher Cox. There's Aaron Donald. There's Chris Jones. You look at tape. You have got to figure out extra people to block him on the interior, or he will sack your quarterback. Most interior linemen don't get to the quarterback. He's the highest graded defensive player the Chiefs have, according to Pro Football Focus.
Number 8.
Levante David, linebacker. Again, very instinctive, highest graded linebacker for either team. He's essentially a tackle machine. 20-plus sacks, 1,000 tackles, and 100 tackles for loss since entering the league. He's the only player with those numbers. So he'll be around the ball. He'll get somebody behind the line of scrimmage. He'll end up with 11 tackles. His number will be called as much as anybody's number playing defense Sunday.
Number 9.
Vita Vea, defensive tackle who missed a big part of the year. In the 6 games he played for Tampa, they allowed 60 yards rushing. He is, just look at it, he's impossible to move. He's a little short. He came out of Washington. He didn't have the perfect size and dimensions and length. He has been great since he entered the league. He is a problem, and there is no question that Green Bay, we thought they were going to come out and kind of have their way running the ball against Tampa, and no, Vita Vea was back. Played limited snaps. This game, he should be all in.
Number 10.
Shaq Barrett, Tampa, another great player. Led the NFL in sacks last 2 years with 31. 3 sacks against the Packers. He's what everybody is trying to get in the draft. Hey, can you get the quarterback? Doesn't have to be a perfect player. Can you get the quarterback? Yeah, I can. 30 sacks last 2 years, 31. So it's 5-5 in my 10. 5 Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs have a majority of the top 7 players. What's interesting, if I went 11 through 15, I would have 4 Bucks and 1 Chief. 11 through 15, I would go Antonio Brown, Bucks, JPP, Bucks, right tackle Tristan Wirfs, Bucks, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Chiefs, Ali Marpet, the offensive lineman for the Bucks. So as you look at it now, the Chiefs have more great players. The Bucks, to me, have a greater depth of talent. And that, plus being in Tampa, is why this is a field goal game. Because I think Tampa has more high-end players, but in terms of great players, the Chiefs have more. That's my takeaway. I still like Kansas City, but I get the close thing. And then when you take out Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, that's where that keeps Andy Reid up. That's like, okay, this was going to be kind of scrappy regardless, but the safeties are back for Tampa. The tackles are out for Kansas City, and that explains your field goal game. Because many of you, you know, the wise guys like Kansas City, but the majority of the bets, more bets are on Tampa, and that's why.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Danny Amendola, 12 NFL seasons. Tom Brady's buddy, by the way, you've been in these Super Bowl weeks with Tom. So you tell me, is he a little more loose? Is he a little more intense? Does it change, or is Tom during Super Bowl week?
Tom's Tom, man. He's the same. He's been preparing for this, you know, his whole life, this whole year, especially with this group of guys he's with, and he's the same guy.
You know, it's funny. I defended him when he got the divorce with he and Belichick. I said, listen, man, when you get older, you want to be the man. You don't want to be the only man. And he feels like the only guy left in New England. There's no receivers. Nobody can separate. So when he left and chose Tampa, did it surprise you?
It was a little bit shocking, you know, in my mind when I was there, I always felt like Tom was going to end his career there. I mean, business is business. And, you know, Tom was, you know, ready for a transition. He took it. So, you know, I'm obviously excited to see where he is now, and I'm always going to be rooting for him.
Listen, you left New England. You got tired of it. It wore you out. You know, they ask you constantly, Danny, to sacrifice money, sacrifice individualism. You know, listen, I get it. Like, that, when you left there, were you worn out a little bit with New England?
Well, I was an extreme, you know, I was a huge fan of Bill and the way he coached and his tactics and what he did to prepare us for the game. I loved playing for Bill. In a lot of cases, it was the same reason why I went to Detroit and got to play for Coach Patricia. But the fact that he also wore the GM hat and I had to negotiate my contract with him 3 years in a row by myself and take pay cuts to, you know, help him and put rings on his finger kind of wore me the wrong way. So I felt like it was in best interest for me to move on.
Do you think in the end, Tom leaving and succeeding like this as a player, does it make you happy? It's not anti-Bill, but it's more that Tom's kind of proving it was about the player, not the coach.
Yeah, I'm definitely not anti-Bill, man. I love what he's done and how he approaches the game as a head coach. Again, business is business, and you got to be doing. And I learned from Bill, you got to do business as business is being done. And you know, if he wants to cut your pay in half, and you can get more on the street, and you can go somewhere else and help provide for your family, then that's what you got to do. And I feel like you know, that's the same reason why Tom is out of New England and he's on to Tampa.
You talk to Tom anymore?
Yeah, I talked to him 4 days ago, but we keep in touch on social media and text. So I talked to him a couple times a week.
Yeah. You had a great relationship. You guys hit it off early. Why do you think that is?
You know, I get an emotional charge from him. He has the ability to obviously play good football, but he can really raise the level of his teammates in the locker room. This is a guy that is at the top of his game, but with his lifestyle, with the way he approaches the game, he can lift the rest of his teammates to play at a higher level. And that's what I loved about him. That's what I loved about training with him and playing with him. And I knew that we would get into the nitty gritty, into the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, that, you know, we could relate and we could communicate, talk to each other and get the job done. So
yeah,
he's just a great teammate.
Yeah. He trusted you. He had 152 passing yards to you alone against Philadelphia. You got almost 300.
Well,
he trusted you.
I was a system guy, Colin. You know what I'm saying? So I was running around trying to do my job, brother.
We're all just doing our job, brother. We're all doing it. By the way, Matty Stafford goes to the Rams. Jared Goff, who throws a pretty good ball as well, coming to you. Tell me about Stafford, what I don't know. What's Matt like behind the scenes? What's Stafford like?
Man, he's a Texas boy through and through. High school football player, went to Georgia, loves football, loves playing quarterback. He prepares just as good as anybody else in the NFL, if not better, and he's a great teammate. He's obsessed with the game. You know, he has an amazing arm. Obviously, he has great talent, and he gets every question right on Jeopardy. So he's smart. He is he's a great player, man. I'm really excited for him, his family, and I know they are excited to be in LA.
Hey, listen, you've been in three Super Bowls. You played in a lot of football games. You're not the kind of guy. You've been a big game player. Is the Super Bowl different? Do you have a little butterflies playing in them?
You do, yeah, no doubt. The first one I went to, I was nervous. You know, I returned the opening kickoff to the first Super Bowl I played in, and I told myself, regardless of whether he kicks it 5 yards deep, 6 yards deep, so I'm gonna take it out. I think I got it to the 19. I wasn't too happy about that, but it was nervous, man. I got to see all the lights go off in Arizona when we're playing the Seahawks, and I caught the ball and I ran, and it was a dream come true.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you like Sunday?
Man, I'll tell you what, they're two great teams. I feel like it's going to be an offensive showdown. I feel like they're going to score a lot of points, and I truly feel like the last team with the ball is going to win, whether it's by a field goal or by a touchdown. So, you know, two great teams, man. A lot of speed with the Chiefs, you know, a lot of talent with the Bucs, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah. Okay, he is a free agent. He's been in three Super Bowls. He's still productive, undrafted in 2008 out of Texas Tech, and he made playoffs in each of his 5 years with the New England Patriots. He's Danny Amendola, and he's on the market, ladies and gentlemen. He is on the market. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be on your show, man. Huge fan.
Thanks, Danny Amendola.